What if you could hang out with seriously talented copywriters and other experts, ask them about their successes and failures, their work processes, and their habits, then steal an idea or two to inspire your own work? That's what Kira and I do every week at the Copywriter Club podcast.
You're invited to join the club for episode 27 as we chat with a copywriter and business coach known by her first name only, Tepsi, about quitting her job and earning enough within 4 months to retire her husband, getting the right mindset, as well as getting rid of limiting beliefs, and writing with personality.
Hey, Kira. Hey, Tepsi.
Hey, how's it going?
Tepsi, we're excited to have you here today.
I'm super excited to be here because if I was a brand new copywriter, this would have helped me so much. So I'm really always excited to help the next generation of people.
And we hope that we're helping out a few experienced copywriters as well. And maybe you can help us with that and sharing some seriously great wisdom today.
Tepsi, I was just going to share, you know, I first heard about you at a, this is going to sound so posh, which is not my life, but at a rooftop party in Manhattan with a pool nearby. I was at Jen Scalia's membership parties. I just kind of randomly got an email from her, and I like Jen, so I showed up just to mingle. And I remember at this party chatting with different women, and everyone was talking about you. And everyone, and you know, here I am, a copywriter. I'm like, not pitching myself, but I'm chatting and trying to network. And everyone was like, oh yeah, there's this other copywriter, Tepsi, yeah, and she's going to be here tonight. And everyone was so excited to meet you. That was the first time I heard about you. And I was like, who is this woman? I need to meet her. I need to know who she is. Ever since then, I've kind of just like kept you on my radar and just knew that we wanted to chat with you about your almost like overnight success in copywriting. And I know there's a lot more to it that we can unpack in the show. So we can start with just, you know, how did you become Tepsi? No last name, like Tepsi the copywriter.
I'm all about just one name to make it easier. My domain name is super easy. You know, I just introduce myself. We don't have to confuse me with any other Tepsis out there. My business anniversary is 2 years ago. I was a digital nobody. Nobody knew my name. I never got any shout outs. It still feels weird to hear you say you went somewhere and people were talking about me. I think that's kind of rude that they hear introducing yourself and somebody wants to talk about a whole different person. You're like, who the heck are you?
I know. I was like, what about me? I'm a copywriter too. No. They didn't care.
So I apologize on their behalf for that. And I care about who you are. So my story is that I started out digital nobody. I was really interested in life coaching and how to go about making my life more streamlined, feeling happier, feeling more at ease. And as I was learning techniques for myself, I thought, you know, maybe this will be my big business thing. You know, this is how I'll kind of reach the masses and help people, which was my big mission. The first thing I really wanted to do was start an online summit and run it and maybe do it like a yearly thing. And so I went into a Facebook group where I had never really been active. I was a lurker. And I was the kind of person who would cheer everybody else on, but never really, you know, offer my expertise or talk about who I was. And so in that group, I shared that I wanted to do this summit. And since I had been really active in there, just encouraging other people, lots of people responded saying, yes, I want to be on your summit. And I didn't even really have any ideas or anything. They just wanted to talk to me because I had been so encouraging of them in their process. So I started that process and very quickly met another very successful copywriter. And she said to me, I don't know why you're doing this life coach thing. You're not a life coach. You're a copywriter. And I was like, but you don't know me. You don't know anything about me. How is this, you know, your idea? And she said, no, I just have this feeling. I've seen your posts on Facebook. I believe you can help a lot of people. And in fact, my business is overbooked and maybe I can give you some referrals. And just like that, she sent me a test assignment to make sure that she wouldn't, you know, send me referrals and I would embarrass her. But she actually paid me for the test assignment. And from there, you know, I got a couple of referrals from her, and those referrals referred their friends. And people started really quickly shouting me out in Facebook groups. And I realized that being shouted out in these business groups was getting me more clients. So then I became more strategic now that I realized that this was happening. And I started asking clients when we were working together, on our first conversation, hey, please go in these Facebook groups and let people know we just, you know, talked, and let them know what your experience was in our initial conversation. And then the same thing when I delivered copy, I asked them to go and let people know and to send any referrals to me if they knew of other people. And so, like, I went from digital nobody in February 2015 to March, and I'm seeing my name all over Facebook groups, and I'm getting recommended by other people because, you know, groupthink, right? So if someone you trust is recommending Tepsi, then you trust that person. So now you trust Tepsi. So all of a sudden I'm getting, you know, my name tagged all over the place. And that really brought in a lot of business. And I also strategically attended a conference where there, I knew there wasn't going to be a lot of other copywriters. My goal there was to make sure everybody knew my name. So when there was a Q&A session, I went up to that mic. I was scared out of my mind. I was like shaking and nervous in front of all these industry leaders. But I got up there and I said my name, what I do, and whatever my question was. And I was really strategic about what kind of question I asked so I could position myself as an expert, but look like someone who's, you know, humble enough to ask, you know, when you need help. And so at that conference, tons of people reached out to me. And I walked away with like 10 clients from that conference. That was a day that I'd actually quit my job. I went to that conference. And so it just kind of snowballed. But I was, it was a series of luck and chance and then seizing the opportunity and being strategic with the luck that I was having.
Whoa.
Yeah, sorry. Crazy.
You guys, I silenced you. Like, was that too long-winded?
No. I'm sort of trying to wrap my head around it. So Tepsi, I'm curious, how much do you think that is a result of your unusual name? You know, we've interviewed another copywriter with sort of a different kind of name. Kira has sort of an unusual name.
It's not that special anymore.
I have a pretty boring name, right? So if I go to a conference and I say, hey, remember Rob, you know, then yeah. So I'm curious, do you think that that contributes to it? But more importantly, those of us who maybe don't have that advantage of a memorable name, what can we do to stand out like you do?
So number one, I always have this big bun on top of my head. And so the bun really helps me stand out because I'm only 5'1¾". I always hold on to that.
I'm not going to wear a bun, so I'm not sure that's going to help me.
Rob, you have got to be open here.
This is our second episode that we've talked about man buns now.
Shout out to Ryan Schwartz.
So I wear, you know, a bun. I have like a signature branded thing about me. I kind of wear the same kind of colors and things. And these days I implement and wear a lot of my own African traditional clothing that I'm from South Africa originally. And I live back here in South Africa now. And so I kind of have like a look that makes me distinct from everybody else that you see. So that's one of my, you know, strategies, you know, my brand assets that I think I bring to the table. My name was definitely something I think people remembered because I chose to go by Tepsi. It's a nickname that my parents gave me. And I always knew something really special was on the table when my mom would come in and say, Tepsi. And I'd be like, oh my gosh. And I'd run downstairs. She got me something, you know, and I'd, you know, check out what it was. So when I started my business, I was a government corporate employee working in the military space. So I worked on a base. I had an agreement with my employers. I don't know if I'm outing myself right now, but I signed something that said I would never take payments or do a side business that involved foreign nationals because, you know, that was just part of our job description that we had to kind of stay with American money, with whatever we were doing. And so I quickly got clients in the UK and Australia and Canada. And so now I'm taking money from foreign clients. So I thought I was being tricky. So I'm like, I'm just going to go by my nickname, Tepsi. And when I quit my job, I, you know, changed my branding. I was ready to change my branding. I actually didn't go follow through with it, but I was ready to change that. I was ready. You know, I changed my Facebook name and nobody could find me, number one. And number two, my clients and my, you know, people that had started to follow my brand, they revolted and they were like posting, we don't like this. We know you as Tepsi. It rhymes with Pepsi and your effervescent personality just goes with it. And so that's how I ended up going by Tepsi. And, you know, the other names just kind of fell away. But if you don't have something unique like that, then look for another way to stand out, whether it's the way you dress, maybe it's your, you know, signature phrase that you use. I always use the word soulful. People know me as a soulful copywriter, and I work with soulful entrepreneurs who want to make, you know, six-figure launches and things like that. So you know, look for other ways to distinguish yourself if your name isn't, you know, super fancy.
Rob, we need to have a different show about how we can style you and brand
what,
you and what give
not
you
to
a new
wear,
name.
What not to write, what, yeah.
No, we'll dress you up for the next conference for CXL. Okay, so Tepsi, I think there's so much there. And yeah, your name is unique. And I love that everyone revolted. And I felt like I wanted to revolt when you said that you might change your name back. So, you know, you mentioned that you asked your clients to give you a shout out. And I think that's genius. And that's something that we can all do early on in those, especially in those groups, because there is, I've seen those groups and people post, you know, I recommend this person. It is powerful and it spreads really fast, as you've experienced. And I also like that you mentioned that when you go to conferences, you intentionally wanted to make sure everyone knew your name. And so you got up the nerve to speak and ask a question, which I am always too chicken to do that. So that's something I need to consider and just push myself to do because it does matter. But anyway, my question for you is, as your business blew up so fast, and I believe I read somewhere that Hattie Brazley was the one that was sending you referrals. Is that right?
Yes, she did send me referrals when I first started out. Absolutely.
We love Hattie. But when you just blew up, how did you handle it on the back end of your business with just more work? How did you handle raising rates and just project management? Because it's hard enough to handle all that when you grow slowly. But if it happens overnight, I don't even know how you would do it.
It was really stressful. I'm not going to lie to you. So when I first started, I had my 9-to-5 job and I was moonlighting that job as a babysitter for my 6-month-old and my 2-year-old. And so I was keeping them home while working that job because I was allowed to telework 4 days a week. Then getting clients and just like literally working like night and day at that time. And my big goal was to quit my day job and to move to South Africa. So I knew I needed at least $20,000 in the bank in order to make that dream come true. So I was willing to make anything, do anything to make it happen. And when you know that it's not just about the money, but it's like about a bigger goal, then you're willing to, you know, do what it takes, work really hard until you meet that goal. So that was like the first thing, was keeping that in mind. The second thing that I did was I created like some processes that I could duplicate. I don't necessarily need a lot of information from the person on the call with them about the program they're launching, how many modules it is, how many weeks it is, whether there's a Facebook group. You know, some of those things are really mundane. The time I need to spend with my clients is understanding them and their ideal clients. So who are we selling to and what do they really want? And, you know, what is their pain? That was what I need to talk to my clients about. And then some of this other stuff, I could send them a questionnaire and they could complete the questionnaire. And that quickly eliminated, you know, the length of time I had to spend talking to people. And I could just read that to write their copy. The other thing that I did was that I created a project management board inside Trello. You can do it in Asana or whatever is good for you, but I'm a visual person, so I like the whole sequence laid out in front of me. Trello has a system that like looks like solitaire, basically, and so you can lay out cards inside the visual interface. So I created one card that's all about, you know, questions and comments and concerns. So when people need to, you know, talk to me, we don't email back and forth. We don't Facebook message back and forth. They just post on that card. It makes, you know, communication a lot easier. And there's a record of everything that we talked about. You know, there's a link in there to my calendar and information about how to book and, you know, what they need to do if they need more information from me. There's a link or a card in there for them to upload documents, anything they want me to read or anything they want me to reference or see. There's a card in there that has our contract in it so that they can refer to it and, you know, just make sure that if they, you know, anything is hazy for them, they can go and check that out. So that was like thing number one. When I did that, that changed my life because now I'm not searching for files and folders all over the place. I am in one particular place. Oh, and I forgot one more card that I put in there is for documents, or I'm sorry, links. So I work inside Google Drive. And so whenever I'm done, you know, I create a folder for the person and then I put all the links for the different documents in there. So they know where their stuff is at all times, whether we're still working together or not, they can always access their stuff inside that Trello board. That really helped me. The second thing I did, or the third thing I did, was I told my husband, listen, I need your help. He's a lawyer and he's really great with systems and tech. And so I got him on board to help me with the legal stuff, you know, setting up my business and the legal structures, but also with, you know, when I started Facebook ads and some of those other things, I got him on board. And after I got him on board, very quickly after that, I needed somebody in a tech VA assistant. I have someone who helps me with content and social media and someone who checks my emails for me. So it's all about delegating and getting help very quickly if you are scaling.
So Tepsy, I'd like to go back just a minute. You talked about getting to know your clients and your clients' clients, and I'm really curious about your process for doing that. How much time do you spend? What kind of questions do you ask to really get into their heads so that you can produce copy that resonates with them?
So I spend 1 to 2 hours, depending on how wordy the person is, how much they talk. And my whole goal is to understand when people come to them, what is it that they're complaining about? And I don't like to work with brand new, you know, entrepreneurs because nobody's ever come to them and they don't really have a clearly defined ideal client. So a lot of the time, you know, you write one thing, they tell you it doesn't resonate because they've switched their clients and things like that. So I like to work with people who have, you know, a plan, they have a marketing strategy, they have an idea of who they want to attract. And I kind of also, you know, I ask them beforehand, you know, have you actually spoken to these people on the phone and heard in their words what they say their struggle is as it, you know, applies to your coaching business, whatever it is that you're selling. If they are a no, most of the time I'm not really willing to work with them. It's going to be really painful to extract that emotional information, that really those really emotional words. And so usually they say yes. And one of my best clients, she had spoken to 50 people. She surveyed 50 people before she started out. And she just asked them, what are your struggles? And then when she asked all those people, and then she said, what's your idea of success? She was able to get a really clear idea of who they were. And then when she talked to me, she was able to put it in kind of her words and synthesize. We were able to like synthesize it and make it, you know, language that spoke to them. And when people read her copy, they tell her, oh my gosh, it sounds just like me. And that's deliberate because we actually have been spying and talking to you. So that makes sense that it works, that it sounds like you.
Tepsy, I love the idea of using Trello as your portal to communicate with clients. So it sounds like you're not emailing back and forth with clients when you're in project mode. Can you just kind of go back into that? Because I felt like I got lost a little bit. Are they just, if they have a question, are they just dropping it in Trello and they know it'll, you know, within 48 hours or 24 hours, you will respond? Or like, what is your policy around communication with clients so that you have space to do your work, especially as you've become busier and busier?
Yeah, so I let them know that I'll respond between 12 and 24 hours. I'm between 7 and 10 hours ahead of my clients in the US. You know, they know sometimes I'm going to be sleeping or it's family time or whatever when they are messaging me. So I get, you know, the alerts. The alerts come to my phone from Trello. You can turn on notifications or you can turn on notifications so it sends you an email of the exact message that the person sent and you can reply to them in the email as well. So it makes it a lot easier. I don't have to open the app if I don't need to. If I'm already in my email, I can just respond in my email and it actually just creates a new comment inside our Trello board when I respond from my email. So it makes it so that they know, I let them know, and it's in the contract, you know, what my response time is, and that, you know, any extras. What I found is some people were really hazy when I first started out and they were new entrepreneurs. They had a lot more questions. It wasn't just about the copy. They had a lot of questions about the strategy and the business side of it. And that's where I had to kind of draw the line and be like, you know, I'm your copywriter. If you need coaching, that's a separate thing.
Well, and speaking of coaching, you know, I know that you offer different products, strategy, programs, courses. So I'd like to hear more kind of going back to your timeline of how you evolved from, okay, getting crazy busy with one-on-one client copy work and then evolving and kind of building out this business and this empire. What happened first? How did you, what were the baby steps?
So that's a good question. So yeah, because of the time that it takes doing the research and things like that, I found that I was just working way too much. I couldn't enjoy my life. I couldn't do the thing, you know, the purpose of why I quit in the first place wasn't being served because I was working all the time. So the first thing I did was limit the number of one-on-one people that I took on, increase my prices so that I could be a little bit more premium with what I was offering. And then as I got booked, I was doing a lot of live streaming. It's when Periscope first came out. You know, it was the first big live streaming platform that got really popular. And I was doing it every single day. And at the time, I didn't really have a goal for why I was doing it. I was already, you know, booked with clients and things like that. But I thought, you know, this can be just another way to market myself. So I was doing videos every day and teaching, you know, about copywriting. And I had fellow copywriters joining my audience, and I also had potential clients. But many of them would go to my website, you know, at the end of my broadcast and say to me, I love what you're talking about. I love what you're doing, but I can't afford this. Like, there's no way I can, you know, possibly do this. How can you help me? That's when I got the idea to do a course and package my process and my information, create some templates and things like that, and offer it that way because they asked me to. I didn't really have a big following at the time. I had 80 something people on my email list. And at the time I found out, when I looked, 20 of them were family members or friends. I did a little mini launch on Periscope, and I got 22 people to buy my $250 course. I was so excited, and I thought, okay, I'm on to something.
That's great.
So that's when I started seeing that I could scale one to many, because, like, you know, I couldn't help all those people one-on-one. And then from there, as I'm helping these people inside the course, some of them got interested in writing copy as something for them to offer as a service. And so they started asking me, how do I market myself? How do I promote? How do I, you know, handle clients? And so I had people who were aspiring writers, some people who were coaches, some people who were designers. And so they started asking me for the business side of the help. So I was like, okay, I'm not going to just help you in copy. I can help you in business. Okay, sure. And I kind of tested it out, and I put out a little baby offer of coaching sessions. And people were just on them like hotcakes because they saw my business grow right before their eyes. They'd purchased from me. So they were willing to take the next step with me and go into the coaching space. And with the coaching space, I found that I could charge a little bit more money for my program and help the people who were just like me. And the whole goal was to get them, you know, book. My program is called Sold Out and Book Solid because I wanted them to be like that, you know, because that's what I was doing too. So I kind of put the writing to the side, and I started doing mostly coaching at that point. And now I've brought the writing back with a team.
So you started out a lot of the stuff on Periscope. Talk to us a little bit more about what you were doing on Periscope. You know, what kind of content were you offering there? Are you still doing Periscope? Is that still part of your outreach?
So I haven't Periscoped in a little bit of maybe a month or two, but it is something that I will just hop back on there because I still have thousands of followers on there. It lost its popularity when Facebook Live opened up their doors.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a little bit of a competition, but the Periscope audience, I found for me, were people who were really engaged. They talk back to you and it's an immediate thing. It's not like Facebook Live with any kind of delay. The energy in there is just really awesome. So I do love going back to Periscope. When I broadcast, I usually would have like three tips to figuring out who your ideal client is or how to niche down. And I always had this hashtag of niche and get rich. And so I would, you know, give them tips about different things that they could do and go do right now, or the outline of an about page, you know, how to write an about page that sells. And so I would come up with topics like that and then mix them in with business topics, like how to handle clients or how to handle a sales call, things like that. And I would be pretty off the cuff with my topics, but a lot of the time it was the questions that I was getting inside my Facebook group, or the questions that I was seeing most frequently is what I would normally go and answer as my broadcast.
Tepsi, can we talk about the pain? I feel like I don't want to skip over that part. You know, you mentioned when you were super busy, you know, how you didn't have a life. And I kind of just want to hear more about that. I like the dark side of growing a business quickly and even copywriting, because I've been in that space for a while and many other copywriters have as well. So, like, how long were you kind of in that stage where it was like really painful and like you knew you had to kind of evolve and like bust out of the shell? Was it a short period of time? You know, what did that look like? Because I think those stages are really important, because if you don't feel that pain, I don't, at least for me, I can't like take it to the next level, because I have to be like, I have to feel it in order to take action.
That was probably the first year I was in business. From March 2015 to March 2016, I had so many clients at a time It was ridiculous. My Trello board looked crazy. When I would log in, I would just have these white dots, which meant notification from a client.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I hate that feeling.
that stresses me out just thinking about it.
Anxiety, right? It was just be like, oh my gosh, you feel like running away. Even though this is what you asked for, right? You're like, I asked to be in this spot, and now I'm in this spot, and now I don't appreciate
it. I should be so happy.
Right? And so it was about a year of really painful, you know, growth. And a lot of it was me holding myself back because I was uncomfortable. But, you know, comfort that you know is a lot easier than discomfort that you don't know. So if I know that this is going to be my life, I can prepare myself for it. I can do it even if it's painful. But if I'm going to change my whole business model like I did when I launched my coaching program, now that is scary, thinking, is anybody going to buy from me? So I just kept doing it because of those fears, those inhibitions, and that lack of self-belief that I had in the beginning. Even though I saw a lot of success, I still had a really hard time. You guys are going to be surprised. I had a hard time telling anybody that I was a good writer. I couldn't actually say that. I would say things like, well, you know, I just got lucky, or, you know, it's God-given talent, or, you know, something like that. I just couldn't really say that. I didn't have that confidence. So I kept myself in that painful spot. The thing that took me out of that painful spot was finding people who come before me, who've, you know, either transitioned their business or they've grown their business in the way that I wanted to, and getting that mentorship from them and that reassurance, it's going to be okay. Your business is going to survive. You will continue to be successful. I also did a lot of mindset work myself. I have this book that I love called Psycho Cybernetics, and I read that like all the time to boost myself up and feel good about, you know, what it is I do. But it is really painful. And honestly, it's not, you know, all the lattes and the, you know, beach vacations. It's a lot of late nights. Sometimes client misunderstandings where, you know, there's some kind of miscommunication of some sort. This doesn't happen very often, but once in a while, someone doesn't like something and you're thinking to yourself, but this is what you asked for, you know, like, what the heck? So you have to learn to be diplomatic and to take care of yourself at a certain point.
So Tapsee, one of the things I think that you do is coaching people on that very thing, mindset, and really getting the voice in your head to, you know, getting that right so that you can be confident about your work. And so many writers suffer with imposter syndrome or that lack of confidence. We've talked to a bunch of others about, you know, where they find that confidence. What do you tell your clients in that training of how do they get their minds right so that they can show up and perform and deliver like they need to?
So usually I help them by realizing that they didn't just fall into this. This is not some overnight random talent or skill that they've developed. So if they're a coach or if they're a writer, whatever it is that they are doing now, I know most people who are out there, you know, offering a service, they have either taken classes, had corporate experience, they've experienced some level of success at some point in their life related to this thing that they're now offering. They've helped people get results in some way, whether, you know, that was working for a boss and writing for that, you know, that organization, or perhaps in college, whatever it is, they're good at this. So let's not worry about whether or not you're good at this. We have past experience. You know, I asked them to list out all of the triumphs and success that they've had over time so they can look back and go, oh, wow, I've actually done a lot. I've actually experienced a lot of really awesome things that I made happen for myself. So I really quickly, in the first 2 months, made $25,000. In the third month, we were able to find a buyer for our house that was willing to pay like $20,000 over the asking. So that was really awesome. And then we moved here to South Africa, and my husband quit his corporate legal job at the same time. And, you know, moved into a dream house for us compared to where we lived before. All of that success, and yet I was miserable. I was like, I don't achieve anything. I never, you know, hit my goals. I remember I had a life coach at the time, and I was telling her, I don't know what I feel like I'm just a big fat failure. And I look at all the other people in my industry with all this success, taking all these trips, doing all these awesome things, and I have nothing to say for myself. And she was like, hold on. And we did this like inventory of success. And I realized, okay, I have accomplished something with my life and that I'm doing pretty well compared to where I had been before. So not comparing myself to other people, But comparing myself to myself, I'm doing pretty well. That's thing number one. And then thing number two that really changed me instantly when I started doing it is visualization. So I went from being the person in the room scared to ask questions to being the one asked to come and speak, you know, fly in to Toronto or to New York or to Miami or wherever, you know, people are having events and they're asking me to now come speak. And it was when I started seeing myself as a leader and not seeing myself as a follower, you know, not that there's anything wrong with following. Sometimes you do have to follow, but I decided I'm a leader now. And I visualized my life being different. I visualized seeing myself on stage, visualized seeing myself, you know, having the kind of business that I thought would make me happy. And so that kind of every single day, visualization and journaling and, you know, reminding myself of my success, those are kind of my Cliff Notes mindset routine.
Well, I think it's a relief to hear from you that, you know, that it hasn't been easy and that you've questioned yourself and even been miserable when you are buying a new home and have, you know, retiring your husband and having all these amazing things happen, but you're still not really like really feeling all of it, because I think that's common. So, you know, and what's really stuck out to me is that you mentioned, you know, you didn't feel comfortable saying you were a good writer, so you said you were lucky. And I caught you saying that a couple times early on in this conversation too, that you just got lucky with your business growth happening so quickly. And I don't remember who told me this. Maybe Rob did, because Rob always says genius things, that when people say that they got lucky, it's usually not about luck. It's that they put in a whole lot of hard work, because I find myself saying that at times too, like, oh, I got really lucky here. And then when I think about it, I'm like, no, like maybe there was a little bit of luck, but what all went into getting that, like getting into that position for that luck to really hit, there was a lot of work. So that just stood out to me, because yeah, maybe there's a little luck involved in your quick success, but you clearly like just got things quickly and understand what was working and pivoted fast and really worked your tush off. So anyway, I guess I'm just saying like, thank you for mentioning all of that. I kind of want to pivot and talk about where you are today and what your business looks like today, because you mentioned that you have copy now with a team. So I'm imagining that you have a team of copywriters, maybe you have more of an agency model. So can you just describe, you know, where your money's coming from today? We don't have to give like an exact breakdown, but what you're running and what the business looks like.
Although if you did want to give an exact breakdown, a lot of people would love to hear that too.
That's true.
So, joking.
So I just want to be really transparent as I'm talking about the tough times. There have been a lot of tough times. There have been people who didn't believe in me, people who say and do things that really hurt, you know, along the way. So that is part of being a personality and putting yourself out there on the internet, because anybody can, you know, respond to you on the internet. I lost a lot of my confidence and my zest and my oomph, surprisingly, in like November, December 2016. All of a sudden, I found myself feeling like, oh my gosh, like maybe I don't really deserve all of this. And I took a big break from doing all of my work of promoting and marketing myself. I realized looking back now that it was, you know, me looking, hearing other people's voices and deciding that their voice was the truth when it's so clearly not. That's something that still happens. You know, I don't want to make this look more glamorous than it is, you know, along the way. It's really important to talk about the tough times and the failures and the, you know, missteps. It's not failure. It's meeting a challenge and creating an opportunity, I guess. Along the way, I was smart in that I launched a membership community, and it's a membership community where we talk about copywriting, but we also talk about online marketing and strategy. My husband is a lawyer. He comes in there and talks about legal stuff, and he also does the tech in my business. So he answers any of the tech stuff. So that brings us some recurring monthly income from people who are members there. Then I have my coaching program, which is called Sold Out and Book Solid. And I enrolled people depending on what they wanted to do. Some people paid off. It was either $2,500 or $5,000. Some people paid it off immediately. And then some other people decided to go for a 6-month or a 12-month payment plan. And so that brings in money. Even when I'm not launching, you know, we're still getting those people's recurring payments. So that's really awesome. And it takes a lot of pressure off. And it allowed me to take the break that I needed, about like 8 weeks of chilling. I went on a Buddhist retreat. I took some time to myself and gathered myself, got back to myself. You know, along with the copy, there's always the design, and people always got stuck or tripped up on that. So I have a tech VA who created some templates for us so that my copywriting templates go along with web design templates, and you can, you know, do an upsell when you buy my copywriting course. You can do an upsell into the design. So my copywriting course is called The Right to Profit, and then there's the design studio that goes along with it. So we get sales from that. People come in through Facebook funnels. They buy the course, they buy the design studio, and they also sometimes might just buy my sales page template or my about page template, which I have as standalone for sale. Then finally, we've got the clients, the copywriting clients that I'm starting to welcome back in. I didn't take on very many one-on-one clients for the past year or so. And so now I've started, you know, bringing that back in because people know me for copy. They still recommend me for copy, even when I didn't want them to. I was like, I'm not doing that. Stop tagging me. And they still did it. So I was like, wait a minute, I'm saying no to money here. Let me figure out a way to make this work. And so I have two people who are really excellent writers, but they want to get some experience and they want to work with someone who can help them by bringing in business and do like a profit share type of model. That is the breakdown of my business, what it looks like now. And it's taken a long time to evolve to this point. Well, not a long time, it's 2 years. But when I first started out, for the longest, I only had the one-on-one copywriting work. And within a few months, I created the copywriting course. And I only had those two things. And I would recommend, exploit and launch those two things. You don't have to go crazy and create all these other, you know, revenue models until you really perfect the one or the two things that you're doing and you feel really good about it and they're kind of self-sustaining.
Tepsi, can I ask a question that I ask a lot of the writers that we talk to? And that is, what do you do to improve your skills? Where do you go? What kind of resources are you using to become a better writer?
So can I admit something really embarrassing to you?
Sure. Be vulnerable.
Oh, I've been really vulnerable here all the time, right? I'm like ready. I'm like, why aren't you guys crying? I've just told you some really like,
They're streaming. Yes.
So in the beginning, I had never taken a copywriting course. I didn't really know what copywriting was. So, when I first got recommendations and referrals, what I did was I recognized all the industry leaders like Natalie Lussier and Melanie Duncan and Marie Forleo and Danielle Laporte. And I went and looked at like their websites, and I didn't even like know that there's a thing like there's I can go buy a book on this. I wasn't even thinking. I just went and looked at their websites and was like, oh, I see a structure to this. Oh, I can see that, you know, how this is happening. I can see the sequence that's building up to asking for the sale. Okay, I got this. I can do this. So that's what I'm a little bit embarrassed about, because I kind of didn't do much background before I started. And I just kind of had the talent. And at a certain point, people would started asking me, like, do you recommend any copywriting resources, any books, anything? And I was kind of like, this is the moment where I'm humbled to say, let me go and do some research and read and check this out. And that's when I went and checked out some of the classic copywriting books, some of the old sales letters and the news clippings of, you know, mail to order things. And I started seeing some what the classic copy looked like. And realized, oh, wow, this is some really awesome things that I can incorporate in my self-made style of copywriting. And now I go back and I read those on a regular basis. I will open up those different books. I've got them on the Kindle. I read other people's sales pages insatiably. I'm always really excited when I see somebody launching, a big name launching, because I want to see what their sales page looks like. So it is really important for me to go back. And I even did what, you know, the old school copywriters recommend at this point when I was doing this little bit of learning that I decided to undertake and, you know, write old sales letters out by hand.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I want to do that at some point. I've heard it works. Oh, it's interesting because I feel like we've had a handful of guests who have done something similar and just kind of jumped into copywriting and then figured it out as they went. I know Hillary Weiss has really just trained herself. And Rye Schwartz mentioned, you know, taking a copywriting job, like a corporate gig, and then like rushing into his office to pull up resources online to figure out what copywriting is because he was now in charge of it. So I feel like a lot of us just kind of wing it and figure it out as we go and then dive in as we can. So
yeah, I think that's what college is really good for. It trains you to like BS your way through the whole semester and you figure it out. And so I took a job as a technical writer, requirements analyst, and business process something. I was doing something about business processes on a software engineering team. And I studied communication, no training for that whatsoever. So I just ordered a bunch of software engineering textbooks to figure it out, you know, in that job. So it's all about winging it. That's what life is.
Exactly. And Tepsi, I know we are out of time. I would like to ask you one lightning round question. So I guess we'll just keep it short. What is one missed opportunity that copywriters are missing today?
The number one thing that I tell people when they say to me, I can't get clients, I don't know where to get clients, I'm so stuck. And I say to them, there's all these free Facebook groups. You're just sitting there lurking. Don't join a Facebook group that's run by me because I'm sharing my expertise and the people are looking at me as the leader. Go into a Facebook group that's run by a business coach or a web designer or somebody else that has a niche that's complementary to yours, but they're not doing the exact same thing. And just start sharing your knowledge in there. Start sharing, you know, tips about how to niche down. Start sharing tips about what a good about page looks like or what a sales page should be and how to like decide on your design around the words that you use. Things like that, just start sharing. You don't have to be selling. You don't have to be dropping your links. People will very quickly start to get curious about who you are based on the fact that you're sharing that if you have no audience. The other thing is don't discount the work that other people have done to build their audience. So for example, you know, if you have a mentor, if you see someone that has a big audience, you can definitely ride off of them and the work that they've done.
At this point in the interview, we lost our connection with Tepsi and we didn't get a chance to ask her how people can connect with her online. And so we're just going to throw this in there. You can find Tepsi on Twitter at Tepsi, T-E-P-S-I-I. And you can find her at her website at tepsi.com. Again, T-E-P-S-I-I.com. And that's a wrap. You've been listening to the Copywriter Club podcast with Kira Hug and Rob Marsh. Music for the show is a clip from Gravity by Whitest Boy Alive, available in iTunes. If you like what you've heard, you can help us spread the word by subscribing in iTunes and by leaving a review. For show notes, a full transcript, and links to our free Facebook community, visit thecopywriterclub.com. We'll see you next episode.